This is Jason Marsden, the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe Renegades. You're listening to the GeekCast Radio Network. Yo, Joe.
Hello, and welcome to the special ToonCast interview of Jason Marsden. I am Mike T.F. Joan Blanchard, and joining me is Tara the Rising Star. Hello.
Hey.
Yes, today we have a really, really awesome privilege to talk with Jason Marsden. You may know him from such video games as Killzone 3, a bunch of other stuff. I know he was in a couple of the Burnouts. Also from voice acting, you know him as Duke in G.I. Joe Renegades recently. Firefly from the Batman, Max Goof from House of Mouse as Goofy's son. And I know him specifically as Snapper Carr and from Justice League and Static. From Static Shock, he was Richie Foley slash Gear. I had messaged Jason, a few months ago. And it just, it never lined up. And I kept, every other month I would like send him a message, say, hey, Jason, do you have, if you have time, great. If not, cool. And he just messaged me out of the blue. We're recording this on a Monday night. He just messaged me like 24 hours ago, like on a Sunday night, saying, hey, I have this time available. I was like, oh, okay. It's like, and I understand. I mean, Jason is an awesome, awesome guy, and it's going to be a pleasure to talk to him. So do you have anything you want to say before we get to the interview?
Yeah, well, just I'm excited to speak with him, and I'm a huge fan of Static Shock. When it was on, I watched it religiously, and it's an honor to speak with him.
Very, very cool. So that is coming up next, the interview with Jason Marsden.
Circuit board. Opticon scalometer.
Optical blabber?
Nah, just clowning you. We're all done.
Done with what?
Jet blades. Woohoo! Let's see what they can really do.
Richie, this is too much.
You're right. The rear boosters must be overpowered.
No, man, not the skates. You!
What do you mean?
The robot, the zap caps, all this stuff. I mean, all of a sudden, you're Brainiac the Maniac.
So I'm a little smarter than most people. What's a big deal?
A little? The Department of Defense couldn't think up most of this stuff.
Well, they don't have to. I already thought it up for them.
Focus, Richie. Remember when you said your head felt like it was on fire? Well, maybe you were right, because something's really cooking up there.
I do feel different lately. I think faster. A lot faster. Sometimes I can't stop thinking. Sometimes it's like my thoughts are thinking thoughts. See, I just thought that. It's like ideas are exploding in my head. Does it look bigger? It does, doesn't it? Cranial perimeter is definitely expanding. Oh, no.
You look fine.
Fine? I'm having some kind of strain on the brain breakdown. I could be going crazy.
Rich, you know what I think? I think maybe you're becoming a bang baby.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike TFG1 Blanchard from the GeekCast Radio Network, and I'm joined with Tara the Rising Star. Hello.
Hey.
This is Tara's very first voice actor interview, and we have the super awesome privilege to interview Jason Marsden. Yes, that's right. Gear from Static Shock, Snapper Carr from Justice League, Max Goof from House of Mouse. Duke from the new G.I. Joe Renegades cartoons is on the line with us. Hello, Jason. How are you?
Hello, Mike. Hello, Tara.
Hello. How's it going, man?
Hi. It's going good, thank you. And how are you?
I'm doing awesome. It's a beautiful semi-rainy day here in Southern California. Perfect day to stay indoors, do an interview, maybe watch a movie later.
Movies are good.
That works. So what, can you tease us with any current projects you're doing right now? I know that you're doing G.I. Joe Renegades as Duke, but what else you got going on?
Right now I am on The Garfield Show, which is on Cartoon Network. And I do the voice of Nermal on there. Nermal's Garfield's, you know, the thorn in his side. As well as very other voices on that show. I usually work on Fairly Odd Parents. I think they wrapped their final season already. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on a bunch of video games. And some of them I signed a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't tell you
That's cool.
what they are. That's but they'll be hitting the shelves probably sometime next year.
Sweet. Awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So just to kind of get us started into your background, tell us like where you grew up, how you like wanted to get into acting or voice acting and stuff like that.
I grew up in Warwick, Rhode Island. And my parents and I moved. We drove cross country to Los Angeles. For my stepfather is a ballet teacher, so he got a gig at Fullerton College teaching ballet. So we drove cross country, and you know, I was 11 years old. I was cute, so people told me, and they said, "Oh, you should get your son into acting. Get your son into acting." So my mother found a workshop that did about 6 weeks theatrical, 6 weeks commercial, and then they sent me to an agent, and they signed me that day and just started saturating me and everything, in movies, TV, commercials, voiceover, animation. And animation was just one of the things that I gravitated towards, that I was good at, because I was always a big fan of cartoons growing up. And I know I like to think it's because I'm an only child, and I had a lot of time to talk to myself and play with myself in that respect. And all the action figures I played with had to talk and sound just like I heard them on the cartoons. So that was kind of like my training ground in a way. And then, you know, lo and behold, I was fortunate enough to get into the small community of voiceover artists.
Very cool. If you could be working on any one show that you have worked on in the past, if you could still be working on it, what show would it be?
Animated show? You know, I'd love to do some more Max. I think he's a character that Disney could still utilize. They're always talking about getting, you know, the teen boy demographic.
Mm-hmm.
And Max is a lot of fun, and I like working with Bill Farmer, who's goofy, and I like the relationship that they have. I think there should be more Max and Goofy stuff in the future.
Did it really? This is kind of like a side question. How long did it take you to learn Goofy's little yodel thing to fit into the character of Max?
His yuck. it's something I always always kind of knew how to do. You know what? Here's a funny story. When I was I guess I was 13. You know, Muppet Babies was really big, and Disney. Would you mind shutting that for me? Disney was going to do the Disney Babies, so I auditioned for, you know, Baby Donald, Baby Mickey, and Baby Goofy, and I had booked Baby Goofy. So I, you know, during the audition, they wanted me to work on the Goofyisms. So that show actually never. They never even recorded a pilot. It never went forward. But from there, I guess it was my training ground of sounding like Goofy.
Very, very, very cool.
I have to say, Max is one of my favorite characters.
Right on, right on.
I love how you portrayed him. Just, he's hilarious, and he's a great
character. Thank you. You didn't think he was a little dick?
No, I didn't think he was a little dick, no.
I always thought he was way too mean to Goofy. Goofy was just, you know, I mean, I can understand teen angst, but... But he was just so unforgiving sometimes, I thought.
Sure, but he's a very interesting character.
Right on.
Yeah. So, you know, out of all the characters that you've played, what would you say are your favorites?
Oh, you know, Max, you know, Duke, G.I. Joe's, he's a fun character. You know, again, just being a G.I. Joe fan. I did a show called Lunatics, where I got to do, like, kind of my best Daffy Duck impression. And Fairly Odd Parents is fun, too, because it's just a lot of frenetic energy and crazy comedy.
Nice. So do you like playing the good guys, the bad guys, serious guys? Which ones do you like? Funny guys? Which ones do you like better?
Oh, I definitely like the bad guys. They get the most monologuing and the most interesting Interesting dialogue.
That's true.
Everyone we've asked that question always picks the villains because of that exact same answer.
Oh, yeah. Hey, if I was a voice actor, I'd do that.
Yeah.
You know, like doing G.I. Joe, like, I mean, I loved Duke, but most of it was, you know, barking out orders and you know, the heroic stuff was, you know, was written in the action.
Right, yeah.
It's fun when the villain characters come in because they get to expound and really, you know, captivate the audience. So as an actor, those are the kind of roles that, you know, you really hunger for.
And you're one of those voice actors that really doesn't alter his voice. I mean, like, when we first got on the line here, I'm like, holy crap, it's Max, because your voice, and I think it's a testament to what you do with your own voice. You don't have to use, you know, you don't have to do mimicking. Not that there's anything wrong with the mimic, but, you know, it's one of those things, kind of like with Barry Gordon that did Donatello in the 1987 Turtles cartoon.
Right.
That's his own voice. That's his regular voice. And I think that's great that there are people out there that can use their own voice to expound on a multitude of characters.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, because I sit back and I'll work with guys like Dee Baker and John DiMaggio and Frank Welker and these guys who have, you know, this amazing amount of range. And I'm like, wow, I wish I could do that. I'm always doing me. I'm not complaining. But that's a great compliment. Thank you.
What is it like sitting next to Frank Welker during the Garfield show?
It's insane. I mean, the dude has been around forever. I think he's one of the longest standing, still working voiceover actors, and who we've all heard growing up. And I used to watch Scooby-Doo Mysteries before school, and actually got to do a Scooby-Doo Mystery Inc. A couple weeks ago. So it was, you know, there I am in the booth with him, you know, doing Fred and Scooby, and hearing him do those voices. It just makes it giddy.
Yeah.
So you know what, Mike? Interesting thing I actually learned this past weekend when I was at the convention from a voice actor was that most of the time producers are looking for people who can just do their normal voice. They're not always looking for someone who can do, you know, who can imitate, like, Darth Vader or Scar.
Right. I mean, but the thing of it is like, what's a really, really good example? Like Townsend Coleman, his voice, his regular speaking voice, because I heard an interview with him a while ago, is nothing like what Michelangelo sounds like in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 1987 cartoon. You know, I mean, I know I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that at all. I like I said, it's a testament to Jason that he can do that. Speaking of G.I. Joe, when prepping to do the voice of Duke, did you go back and watch any of the old G.I. Joe stuff?
You know, I didn't. No, I didn't.
How do you feel that voice acting differs from being a child voice actor, say, in Gummy Bears, to being a character like Richie / Gear in Static Shock? Like, what's the difference for you? Like, you've grown up in this business. I mean, one of your youngest roles, as far as I know that I found out, was you played a voice in the Disney's Adventures of the Gummy Bears in 1989?
That's right.
I mean, how is the progression for you? What's the difference from doing it as a kid and doing it as an adult now?
Definitely the work ethic. For example, in Gummy Bears, you know, I was fresh off the boat, you know, from acting class. And we're always taught to, you know, look your fellow actor in the eye when you speak to them. When we were recording Gummy Bears, they had lined us all up, you know, one in front of the other. And I was in front of everybody. So I would do my lines, and I would turn around to the person behind me, and my voice would get off mic, and then I'd have to constantly be like, Jason, you have to, you know, speak into the microphone when you're doing voiceover. as to now, I definitely know that, you have to look, you have to act, perform into the microphone. even if you're lucky, if there's another actor in there, you know, there's a lot of stuff we do nowadays that it's just one actor in the room, as opposed to the group.
Yeah.
So, Jason, every voice actor seems to have, you know, a method for remembering which of their voices go with which characters, especially if they're on a show where they've voiced a lot of characters like you did on Tiny Toons and Futurama and others. How do you keep all your voices straight?
They have they have these talented engineers at work who have a file of everyone's a sample of everyone's voice, and if you need like I just need a little refresher on Chester, they have it for you right there.
Nice.
Very cool. In the thousands of recordings you've done over your career, what are some of the funniest things, whether it be mistakes someone made, practical jokes someone pulled, or anything that you've been a party to or witnessed as far as like behind the scenes stuff from any of your voiceover stuff? Or any of your on-camera stuff as well?
Well, it might take me a few moments. Let me preface by asking, is this a PG a show or
no? It's fine.
Nope.
We're totally explicit. It's not in the beginning.
Voice actors. A lot of people don't realize this are a dirty fun group of people.
Who, yeah.
I would almost love to see like a roast of Frank Welker on Comedy Central and see what happens. Off the top of my head, recording a Goofy movie. There's a scene where Max and Goofy, they check into this hotel and there's a mermaid light switch and they light up and her shells, her bra kind of lights up. And, Goofy's line says something like, "Oh, Max, seeing you in this room, reminds me of my childhood." And he ad-libbed, "Oh, Max, seeing you in this room and look at that light switch just gives me a blue steeled Woody." And hearing Goofy say something like that is a lot of fun.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah. So what has been your favorite live action role and appearance, and what is your favorite sci-fi series?
Favorite live action role, I've appeared in Erie, Indiana when I was 17. That was one of my all-time faves. I also got to play Burt Ward in a movie The Week about Burt and Adam while they were shooting the 60s Batman. And favorite sci-fi series, right now, as far as sci-fi, I guess Battlestar Galactica, the recent one, yeah. Yeah, I got to meet, oh my gosh, I forgot her name, played Starbuck.
I'm looking for it right
now. Guys, help me out.
Yeah. I have never watched Battlestar Galactica. So.
I wish I watched that show.
Wait, you guys, really?
Yeah, I never caught on to it. If I don't catch something from the beginning, I don't end up watching it.
Well, that's what DVDs are for, and you can rent the whole series.
Yeah,
what are you guys watching now? What's hot? What am I missing out on?
I'm watching Transformers Prime. I've got to catch up with Renegades, but that's kind of a pimping out your own show.
watching reality shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And / going on YouTube and watching Static Shock.
right on. Oh yeah, this episode's supposed to be about Static Shock, is it not?
We're basically focusing on, this is just like a special interview thing, we're basically focusing on you specifically in your different roles. I mean, since you mentioned Static Shock, how did you feel when you were approached to do that and you saw each of the scripts? Because that cartoon was a very social commentary type of cartoon that dealt with a lot of hard-hitting issues.
Yeah, it's. I'm extremely proud to be part of something like that. It's a rarity. So of course, I ate it up, and I was not familiar with the character beforehand. So it was great to be introduced to that whole lore and get to work with Phil LaMarr again. That was the second cartoon that we had worked on together. Yeah, that was a blast. And the late great Dwayne McDuffie even talked about he was going to do a Richie a Gear spinoff, which I don't know if it would have been a great idea, but I was flattered nonetheless.
That would have been so awesome.
Yeah, you guys would have liked that.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, I've been trying to nail down Mr. LaMarr to get him on an interview.
I the least I could do is let him know that I worked, that I did one with you guys, and to pay attention when if you ask him.
No, that'd be awesome. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, he's a great guy. I'm sure he'd be down.
Yeah. Let's see. What's do you ever go back and watch shows you worked on in the past? whether they've been, you know, just to complete what you maybe sounded like, or to see how it all came together, either right away or years later?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, you know, when I was in my teens and 20s, I definitely, you know, camped out in front of the TV when stuff came on, and then just kind of got casual about it. But every so often, I'll go back and see, you know, how horrendous was I in this project, or you know, what could I have done differently, or just, you know, never saw it in its completion, you know, how it came out. Like, I worked on Generator Rex. I'd never seen it before, and, you know, we're in our second season. I was like, I should probably watch the show and see what I did and see what the show's all about. And lo and behold, it's a show that I definitely – it reminded me of Transformers in a way, from the 80s when I grew up. It reminded me of something that I would have watched growing up.
Yeah, very, very cool.
Nice. So which voice actors did you most look up to when you were first starting out, and which voice actors do you still look up to that are around today?
Oh, man. Frank is up at the top there. You know, Gummy Bears, I got to work with June Foray, who she's one of the first. I mean, she was in, like, a lot of classic Looney Tunes shorts. You know, she was the granny. She was Rocky and Bullwinkle. Right now, you know, Phil, D. Bradley Baker, John DiMaggio, Tara Strong, Rob Paulsen is one of my absolute faves, you know, because I totally dug Animaniacs.
You're naming off half the people we've interviewed.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked to Tara and we talked to Rob as well.
Right on. Man, you know, I knew Tara before she was Tara Strong. I knew her when she first, like, got here. She's Canadian.
Yes. Ironically, she's from Toronto.
That's right. And I worked with her on it was Extreme Ghostbusters. That was the first thing we'd ever worked on together. And seeing her just grow and dominate in this industry and booking stuff that I auditioned for. That's the thing about you probably already know this, Tara, but, you know, women get twice as many opportunities in voiceover, especially if you can do voices for
young boys.
Young boys. Yeah, she is definitely
nice.
One of the people I look up to.
Yeah, I've heard that, so very interesting.
Work on your little boy voices, Tara.
Pardon?
Work on your little boy voices.
I will. Definitely, I'll do that. And, you know, out of all the many people that you've worked with over the years, which one would you say that you enjoyed working with the most, and which ones are your closest friends in real life?
Kevin Michael Richardson. Let me throw him back on the list of people I admire as well. But every time I walk into a booth and I see that he's there, I know we're down for a good time. He's just. Have you guys gotten to talk to him yet?
Not yet. We would love to.
Kevin is just. He's like a giant child, and he loves toys, and he loves to disrupt.
Kevin, yeah.
He said something to me that was just so profound. He's like, oh man, if we were like 10 years old, I'd be, you know, calling your house all the time, going, hey, could Jason come out and play? I mean, that's just the kind of guy he is, and he's just insanely talented and so down to earth. Yeah, and he's, you know, you see him, you just want to hug him. He's just that kind of guy.
How have you been to any of, like, the various Comic Cons or any of the fan conventions at all?
I've been to Comic Con in San Diego. I guess this is not really an animation. I went to Gen Con. That's more like a gamers thing. Where else? I did a Star Trek convention once.
What are your opinions of fan conventions?
Oh man, they're a blast! Are you kidding? I mean, I go as a fan. I'm as long as I've been in this industry, I still get starstruck. So I get a kick out of going and seeing the people who I watch on shows and TV and movie, and getting to connect with my peers and getting to hear, like, the latest scoop of what's coming up next. You know, I love it.
Very well. Obviously there are a lot of different types of voice work and on-camera work and stuff like that. Which do you prefer the most out of cartoons, commercials, movies, video games, or anything else in the voiceover, or even the live action, like the on-camera stuff? What do you prefer?
You know, I used to be able to pinpoint it, a few years ago, but now it really comes down to, honestly, I just love to act. I love what I do, and I get a thrill when I'm on camera. You know, there are benefits to that. You know, you can be seen. You get to be on, you know, sometimes an exotic location. You get to be really physical. At the same time, I get to do that with animation. I'm just using my voice, but I can still emote like that. And, you know, I'm working with a lot of close friends. I'm working with a lot of people that I listen to and admire growing up. I'm being part of things that I'm proud of. Commercials are fun. It's like doing like little mini movies. I just love it all. I'm a performer. I love to perform, and getting to do that in any aspect is a treat.
Yeah. The one thing about voice acting in general, it seems like it's one of the easiest jobs ever. I mean, I know it's difficult because you have to train your voice and stuff like that, but it's one of those jobs, and people have told us this before, where you can just show up, do it, and go home. You don't have to worry about, oh, what am I going to have to wear for this audition and that audition and whatever else.
I know. It's funny. I thought about that. I don't think I've seen any one of us show up to work in our pajamas. It's like, I think I'm going to do that one day just because we can't.
You just can't do that.
No, it says you can't, but I haven't, you know, everyone kind of gets dressed. Sometimes I like to put on a suit and tie, you know, just for fun. But no one's ever thought about just showing up in your PJs. It's like, why not? You know, you're not on camera. Of course, that would be the day that, a certain show decides to have, the publicist there with the electronic press kit crew.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to do that. Mark my words. I'm going to show up at work in my pajamas one day. Just because I can.
All work and no play.
Right? It's all play, baby.
In your opinion, how hard would you say it is to make it in the voice acting business, and do you have any advice for people who are just starting out?
Yes, I do. First, it's definitely a challenge to get into this industry. It is a small group, how do I put this? It's a lot of people think that I can, I can do funny voices, or I can do a great imitation of Bugs Bunny, or the Family Guy characters. You know, everyone says, I'm so good. All my friends at work say I'm good. I should be in a voiceover. It's not necessarily mean that you are good enough to do it. I always say Mel Blanc would not have been the success that he was if he could not breathe life into the characters that he voiced. You know, he didn't just give Bugs and Daffy and Bugs and Daffy and Yosemite Sam, all those characters, distinct voices. He gave them distinct personalities because the man knew how to act. He knew how to do that. Dee Baker, Kevin Richardson, Rob Paulsen, all these guys are extremely talented performers, and they're selfless and they're unabashed and they're willing to make fools of themselves. And that's what a lot of people underestimate. I guest teach a voiceover class once a year in Irvine, and I'm amazed. And they kind of bring me in to kind of like give everyone a reality check. And it's amazing. Yeah, there are a lot of great people who do great voices, but a lot of them just can't act. And I always say, if you really want to do voiceover, work on your impressions. Work on impressions of celebrities, cartoons, your family, whatever. But most importantly, you got to take acting classes. You got to take some scene study, some improv, because as long as I can get blue on the show, as Michael Bell says, Michael Bell, one of our top VO guys, says, it's no use having a 6-foot dick unless you can get it up.
Oh, God.
I actually agree with everything you just said there, because I took, I took drama throughout high school. I did acting classes. I did workshops and stuff, and it's really helped out in terms of, getting used to doing acting for animation and stuff, because, I mean, I haven't done it professionally, but I've been doing it, fan dubbing and stuff like that, and it helps.
It does help, doesn't it? It gets you out of your head and into your heart. I mean, that's where every performer that you see, that every performance that you see that really connects with you, it's because that person is the performer is giving it to you from a certain place that's sincere, you know? A lot of voice actors in training kind of worry about how it's sounding, you know, or how it should sound, and they lock onto the performance in their brain, and it affects the outcome. So yeah, you just got to get to the point where you're really comfortable in performing, and then throw in your funny voices, and then you know if you can act with the funny voices, then you're onto something.
It's true.
I noticed when I was doing research on you that you had played yourself on Boy Meets World.
Well, kind of. I'd worked with that production company before on a series called Almost Home.
Mm-hmm.
And Boy Meets World went into production, and they had a part for The Best Friend, which they wrote for me, and they wrote the character's name was Jason. Long story short, I was unavailable, but then became available. So they gave me the role, and then a few episodes down the line, they had referred to me my character's last name, and they said, "Would you mind if you used your last name?" I said, "No, I think that'd be funny." So that's how I got to play Jason Marsden, getting to play Jason Marsden in Boy Meets World.
Okay, now my follow-up question to that is, did you ever have any scenes or lines with Kit, William Daniels?
I did. In fact, he's the one that says, "Mr. Marsden, here's your grade, sir."
Oh, that's so hilarious! Oh man, I would, if I could have any interview at this point, I would love to absolutely talk to William Daniels.
William Daniels,
I'm a huge Knight Rider fan,
right?
And I loved Mr. Feeny as well in Boy Meets World, and that would be a holy grail of interviews for me outside of like Frank Welker or Peter Cullen, since I'm also a Transformers fan.
Right on, right on. Well, I hope that you get to talk with Mr. Feeny.
Oh, Boy Meets World was the shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, so
I miss that show.
So you're probably, what, like 24, 25?
I'm actually
She's just turning 20 this week, actually.
Just turning 20, okay. So, you were young enough to be at home, not going on a Friday night watching Boy Meets World, yeah.
Yeah, well, there used to be, I think, on ABC, a show called... Thank God It's Friday, thing on Friday nights. And it used to be on, you know, with Sabrina and
right.
Two of a Kind. And I used to watch it, like, religiously. And you just don't get that experience anymore now, and it's kind of sad.
Was that how they referred to it in Canada, the Thank God It's Friday lineup?
Yeah, that was how it was promoted here in Canada on ABC.
That's funny. I guess we're so lazy in the U.S. that we just call it TGIF.
Yep.
Yes. Well, no, they did call it TGIF, but that's why I couldn't remember the acronym for it, so I just called Thank God It's Friday.
Right on.
And, you know, just, again, going through your IMDb, it's so funny where you pop up because, you know, like I said earlier, Snapper Carr in Justice League, and then you were Firefly in The Batman in 2004, and... As I said before, because you basically use your own voice for everything, it's like I immediately know when I hear any character that has that voice, I'm like, oh, that's Jason Marsden. Wow, he's in that too.
That's awesome, Mike. That means a lot because, you know, growing up with these guys, you know, like, again, like you, I'm a huge Transformers fan. So, you know, when I heard, you know, Optimus Prime and I heard Ironhide, I was like, that sounds like Peter Cullen, you know? He would pop up, you know, that distinct voice, or Lorenzo Music, you know, Garfield, he was also, you know, Tummy Gummy. I was like, that's that Lorenzo Music. I had a, you know, I could recognize voices growing up, so that make you saying that realize that I'm making that kind of impression. That feels pretty damn good.
Yeah. Another one of Cullen's that I just, I actually did a double take as a kid. The Voltron intro outros and the bumpers for Voltron.
Oh,
I was like,
that's right.
I was like, what's Optimus Prime doing on Voltron?
That's right.
You know, what did you play on Will and Grace?
I played one of Will's blind dates, affectionately called the Pocket Gay, because I'm only 5'1". And they were looking for a super tiny blind date for him. So that was me.
Uh-huh. Very interesting.
They still show it here in Canada on the W Network.
I know. I still get I think residual checks from that more than anything. So they're out of all hundreds of episodes, they're running that one the most.
Nice.
And you know, we may I don't know yet. I know we've got like a coming up on Geekcast Radio Network probably later this year. We've got a podcast that's called Legends of the Dark Knight, which is dedicated to Batman the Animated Series and Batman Beyond. After that, I may do a Superman the Animated Series podcast as well.
Oh,
and,
right on.
Well, when I went back and I watched The Last Son of Krypton, the first three part of that series, I'm like, wait, what's Gear doing as young teenage Clark Kent? What the heck?
Hopefully I sound a little bit more heroic than Gear.
Well, Gear is a hero in his own right.
Gear's cool, man. He's cool.
Gear's cool, but he's up here. You know, he's kind of, you know, the young, the brainy guy. And Clark is supposed to be a little bit more, you know, romantic, more somber, more down to earth.
Oh, man. I love it when I can talk to a voice actor like this that I can just sit here and just go down their IMDb and just bring shows up and they tell us stories.
Reminiscing about the good old days.
Yeah. Secret World of Alex Mack.
Yeah. What about it?
What Carlton Hendy, what character was that?
That was I played like a oh man, was it so Alex's the series, for those people who don't know, is about a girl who gets radioactive powers, and she can control things and morph into liquids and whatnot. And her sister enters a science project, a science contest, mm-hmm. and I'm one of the competitors, and I play like the villain, if you will.
Ah.
In that one.
Very awesome. I wasn't going to ask this question, but I think we've put the going blue out the window. What was it like being a 17-year-old boy on the set of Baywatch?
I don't get why that's blue. Is it because?
You know, teenagers, hormones, Baywatch.
Well, then I'll tell you, it was fucking frustrating because I didn't get to work with any of the girls.
Are you serious?
No, I had seen. Well, Nicole Eggert was in like one scene, but it was mostly me and And I forget the dude's name who played Hobie. Jeremy something, who's now, like, I've seen pictures of him. He's like a music pop star, and he's like ripped and always oiled up in his pictures. But that's who I worked with the most.
And you were I did not know this, and I watched a lot of Murphy Brown. You were a young Miles Silverberg.
Yeah, that was one of the first like bigger things that I did. I think it was I think it was 12 or 13 at the time.
Yes, and according to this, now you can correct this or not, because we all know IMDb is not that accurate. But according to this, your very first role was on General Hospital as Alan AJ Quartermain Jr.
Yeah, that was one of my first. The first thing I ever did was a McDonald's commercial. It was like my first big recurring role was on General Hospital. I was like the second Alan Quartermain Jr. There have been like, I think, seven others since.
Yeah, very, very, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also noticed that you worked on Spirited Away.
Yeah, that's right. I was Haku, the boy who helps Chihiro navigate her way through the bathhouse.
Nice.
Now, was that live action or was that dubbing?
That was dubbing.
How do you feel about, like, just general voice acting, like reading off the page versus having to go back and do dubbing?
I like dubbing because I'm kind of like – I like challenges, and it's definitely a challenge. And, you know, I'm also good at it, so I really strive for that challenge. It's – I mean, the challenge comes from, you know, being able to perform my rhythm to – someone else's rhythm. You know, it's a limited spot. You know, the animation's already done. I have a limited amount of time to put in my performance. And you have to match, you know, the lip flap correctly. It gets more intense, you know, especially when you're dealing with feature films. But I dig it.
Where can people interact with you online if they wanted to? Do you have Twitter? Do you have a website? Any of that, like a Facebook fan page or something like that?
I do. All right, everyone get your pens. I am on Twitter, Jason Marsden on Twitter. And on Facebook, I have two pages, but I prefer everyone go to facebook.com/itsjasonmarsden. That's I-T-S, Jason Marsden. And I do, you know, interact with people. I do write back when I can, sometimes several months later. Right, Mike?
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, I have a website, jasonmarsden.com, where you can, I have a blog that I update periodically, dealing exclusively with what I'm working on and what's coming up next. And, yeah, man, that's it.
Awesome.
Sweet.
We would like to thank Mr. Marsden for taking the time to chat with us. We'll ask you to hold the line, and we will be back after this.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yep.
What are you doing? Stay away from him.
I'm taking your friend Static.
You're wrong. He's not Static. He's not Static.
So that's it. That's the interview with Jason Marsden. Wow.
That was, oh my gosh, that was amazing.
Yes.
he was such an honor. It was just such an honor to talk to him, and he's such a cool guy.
Yeah, he is such a cool guy. And this being your first interview, you did very well. It was one of those interviews where we kind of, like, we had preset questions to ask him, but it was one of those interviews that I really like where it just kind of free flows. And it just kind of, you know, you go into, and I liked how he asked us what we're watching, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I love talking to anyone that is like that. We recorded, I mean, that interview clip is like, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes long. Very, very gracious of him to give us all that time, and just an awesome, awesome guy.
Yeah, he was great to talk to. I really enjoyed listening to hear what he had to say about his career and his history and all the shows he got to work on, and even some, like, you know, the behind the scenes stuff with what goes on while they're recording. it was pretty interesting. And, you know, as many of our listeners know, I'm interested in going into voice acting, and it was a great insight, and definitely was a pleasure to get to speak to him.
Yes, very much so. So for now, we have been
Tara the Rising Star,
and I am TFG and Mike, and this has been the special Tooncast interview of Jason Marsden. We will see you next time.
Come on, Virgil. If you got your shock box on you, I can track you down. Yes! Now what? Desperate times call for desperate measures.